With temperatures rising, summers getting hotter, winters getting colder, storms getting bigger, is man the blame for all this warmer, wacky weather? Are we in a climate crisis on this slice of fresh bread? Welcome to Fresh Bread, a podcast ministry of Grace Bible Church, Gainesville, with Pastor Brandon and Pastor Keith. Well, thanks for clicking on Fresh Bread. Fresh Bread, podcast 63. Fresh Bread, where we're bringing the truth of God's word to a starving world. And today, we're going to take on climate change. Or is it climate crisis? We're going to find out. We're going to talk about our climate and the weather and is our world getting hotter because man is polluting? Man is destroying it? I'm Pastor Keith. He's Pastor Brandon. Are you destroying the world, Pastor Brandon?
Well,
you're drinking coffee.
I'm drinking coffee, so I guess some coffee beans had to be crushed to make that happen.
Destroying plants and So anyway, that's what we'll talk about today. This is a big topic. I mean, this is like, it starts out the size of a golf ball and it can get the size of the moon or even Jupiter if we keep going, because there's so much, if you peel, like you talk about peeling the layers to this climate change or climate crisis, there's so many layers.
It's as large as the universe.
It's large. Is this a depopulation? Is this the world government's trying to control its people? We talk about what happened in 2020 with COVID, right? It was a control grab. I've heard it said that climate change could be the next thing. They come in and take control of things because the world's getting too hot and they have to take over everything in our lives so that they can control the weather. And that's what we'll get into. Who is really in charge of all this? Who's really...
What the agenda is?
Yeah. And really, can we control the weather? Can we make it cooler? Can we make it hotter? Here's the thing that bothers me as we dive into this. How long have we been keeping weather stats? Since what? About 1865? 1860?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know the exact, but for at least 150 years, it seems.
It's something like that. They have a thermometer. And so there's some guy that was writing down the high and the low. And so now we have the average high and low, but it only goes back that far. So how do we know 1500 years ago, things weren't a little warmer? Like,
well, we definitely have evidence, right? We are all looking at the evidence and, you know, whether it be the trees or whether it be the ocean levels, you know, that we were able to see and extrapolate, you know, what the temperature might have been doing during those times based on the evidence that we look at. The problem is that do we have the right presuppositions, you know, the correct presuppositions when we're looking at those things? I mean, that goes back to evolution. And, you know, somebody that has an evolutionary, you know, understanding or presupposition, you know, who believes in millions of years, that they are going to see the evidence differently than someone who's a biblical Christian who believes that God created the world, you know, thousands of years ago as opposed to millions of years ago. And so when we're looking at the evidence, we're looking through, you know, we have our lenses that we're looking through. Ken Ham talks about the, you know, looking through the lenses, and we want to look through a biblical lens when we're looking at the weather. You know, when we look at our world scientifically, we need to make sure that we're looking from a biblical point of view. So I think that the presuppositions that we bring to the argument actually shade how we're going to see the world. And what we're seeing is that there is actually an agenda among the elite that I think is moving the argument in an unhealthy way.
Are we to be, God talks about us being stewards, right? I guess we could start with Genesis 1:28, where the Bible says, Blessed are them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and every living creature that creeps on the earth. So God has given man the job, right, of taking care of the earth.
Yeah, I mean, we see that. Obviously, you see that in, you mentioned Genesis 1:28, you know, that mandate to subdue and, you know, to have dominion over the earth, over the plants and over the animals. And we see that you know, mandate there. And then in Genesis chapter 2, we see that even expanded where he puts, you know, Adam puts the first man in the garden to cultivate and keep the garden. And so, you know, this idea of caring for the garden, but also protecting the garden. And so I think there is a mandate. There is a mandate to care for the world around us, that the right. world that God has created, that he has an expectation that we would care for it. And that, you know, that caring for it would be to protect it, to cultivate it, to use it, to subdue it. And
yeah, what does subdue mean?
Well, I think that, you know, in terms of the the world, I think there's a wildness or a outside it when man, you know, if you think about, as an example, if you think about the, you know, the forest, you think about the you know, even like the Amazon, and it's wild. And, you know, we as a people, as man, I think God expects us to subdue that and to use it, to fill the earth. And that doesn't mean to abuse it, right? That's not a license for abuse. That's a license to subdue and use it. Use the resources that have been provided. Manage the resources that God has provided. And so there's a sense of managing, you know, the forest, to manage the water and the available water, and to manage the soils. I mean, you see that in Scripture. You see, you know, God even told the Israelites, you know, I think that, you know, they were to let the land lay fallow every 7 years. And we know scientifically that when the land lays fallow, that it regenerates itself, and it allows the land to rest. I mean, it's a Sabbath rest, and that's important to the Lord. I mean, he that's how he designed it, and that's how he wants us to handle it. And so he wants us to be good stewards in that way. And I think if we were to follow his, you know, what he would have us do, I think that we would see the earth flourish, and it would, the earth would actually be more bountiful as opposed to less bountiful. I mean, I think that it's interesting because in Genesis 2, if you look at verse 4, these are the generations of the heavens and the earth when they were created in the day that Yahweh made heaven and earth and heaven. No shrub of the field was yet in the earth, and no plant of the field had yet grown, for Yahweh had not caused it to rain upon the earth, and there was no man to cultivate the ground. And I see that as being that creation responds to man. Like there's a creation is responding to man. And it's interesting because Paul kind of says this in Romans 8. He talks about, in Romans 8, he talks about creation is groaning. In Romans 8:18, for I consider that the sufferings of the present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us. For the anxious longing of the creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in a hope that the creation itself will also be set free from its slavery to corruption into the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groans and suffers pains of childbirth together until now. And so, you know, what he's referring to is that in Genesis 3, we have the curse, and God cursed the ground, and it would now yield thorns and thistles as opposed to that it would yield its bounty. And so because of man's sin, God has subjected the earth to futility. And, you know, and so I think that when God redeems man, you know, fully redeems man, we're going to see a creation that is doing what it's supposed to do, that is yielding its bounty, that it will no longer groan under this curse. And so that, you know, God will reverse the curse. And you know, today though, even though the earth is under a curse, I think the creation responds to man. I mean, there's a response to man who is, and we see that, right? I mean, I go out, I you know, my yard is, you know, in whatever state of disarray, and I go out and I work for a couple of hours, and I see, you know, I clean things up, and I And the earth, my yard responds to that. There's a response to me doing that. The grass becomes greener, and you know the bushes, you know, grow better when I trim them, and they, you know, the grass is greener when I put fertilizer on them, and I fertilize the ground and I care for the grass. The grass gets better. I mean, it responds to me. It responds to my hand. We see that, and if you look at that from a whole point of view, from a larger or a greater point of view, or from a higher elevation, I guess you could say, from a 30,000 foot level, if you just pull out and you look at the whole earth, I think that the earth actually does respond to man. And there's a response that says that man is important to creation, and is man is even more important to creation than creation is to man. I mean, if you think about it.
So I agree with you. Man is important, but are there too many? Is the world too populated? Is that why the things are getting warmer and things are falling apart? Is the world overpopulated? Can there be such a thing as overpopulation?
Well, no.
Because God is sovereign.
No. Ultimately, no. The answer is that man, that God has created abundance. This world has abundance. And God didn't create a world that's deficient. Even in the with the curse, the world produces more than enough to go around. Most of the issue has to do with politics in terms of scarcity. There is scarce resources. As a matter of fact, you know, if you think about the study of economics, it's a matter of managing scarcity. I mean, and you know, but I don't think that the scarcity comes from a lack of what the world can, the abundance the world has. I think the scarcity comes from really our mismanagement of the resources we have. As a matter of fact, I would argue that, you know, a lot of people, you know, you look at eschatology, and a lot of people would say, well, why would there be a millennial kingdom? Why would, you know, because we believe that Christ is going to bodily reign from Jerusalem, and he's going to reign on this earth, and it's going to be 1,000 years, and we believe that it's going to be there's going to be physical prosperity under his rule. And, you know, you see some of that thing, and the prophets talk about, you know, that this time when things will be different, like on this earth, that the curse will be in the process of being reversed. There'll still be it's still a time when there's going to be sin, and we see there's going to be an ultimate rebellion at the end of that time. But here's what I would argue. I would argue that Christ will demonstrate, he will demonstrate as the second Adam what the first Adam failed to do. He will demonstrate that the world can be managed and ruled over in a way that will bring about abundance. Now, ultimately, man will still rebel, and we will see that rebellion, and, you know, Satan will be released, and he will see that rebellion put down, and then we'll go into the eternal state. But I would argue that the millennial kingdom, Christ will prove, our Lord will prove that this world still, that this world is abundant, and that he, under the right rule, if man rules in the right way, that it will yield its abundance. So your question was, and I kind of answered more than that, but your question was specifically, ultimately, if you boil it down, why is there scarcity? Well, there's scarcity because of mismanagement. It's not because of a lack of abundance. It's not because of a lack of resources. It's because we've mismanaged the world. We've mismanaged the resources that we have, but we've also mismanaged the world so that it's not yielding all that it possibly could.
Yes, and that's it. And I'm glad you went down that road, because we aren't. But also, when you look at what the authority, I don't know what you'd call them, the those who are moving things behind the scenes, they're talking about overpopulation. And so I was asking you, is Genesis 1:28 still in effect, where the Lord says, "Be fruitful and multiply," or is that over? Is that done?
No, I would say it's still in effect.
So there,
and that He will ultimately bring that. I think the millennial kingdom will be a time of unbelievable progress in terms of the resources of this earth, and that there, I would argue there probably will be a population explosion during that time.
I've heard that too, that there could be a lot of people in that time.
Yeah, I mean, I think prior to, it's funny because I think prior to the flood, the earth had more people than it does today. That's, you know, if you think about the lifespans and you think about where we were, I would argue that very, very, very possibly, I would say even it's probable that prior to the flood, there were more people on earth than there are today.
So be fruitful and multiply still applies. So that means there cannot be overpopulation because God wouldn't say
that. There can't be overpopulation. There can't be overpopulation in terms of what the earth can produce. There can be overpopulation in terms of mismanagement. You know, that, you know, you look at famines that go on, and famines generally are because of mismanagement. Yes. Whether it's a lack of knowledge in how to make the land produce, or whether it's politically driven in not allowing food and resources to flow to the people who need it, you know, whether it's some, you know, warlord that's not allowing, you know, shipments of food or whatever, famine, you know, that sort of thing is generally the result of political issues or mismanagement in general. And when the earth is managed properly, it's funny because you look at Israel before, you know, when in 1948, when they came back to the land, the land was basically desert. I mean, hardly anybody lived there because it couldn't support anybody. But Israel came back and they began to do, you know, to have technological advancements and irrigation and caring for the land and doing things in general correctly. And now the land blooms. You know, people, you know, California is another example of, you know, that California is one of the most abundant, you know, in terms of what the land can produce. It's abundant, but mismanagement and environmental problems, I shouldn't say problems, environmental policies, which lead to problems, have created a situation where California is nowhere near as abundant as it, you know, in terms of producing, you know, produce and the things of, you know, that we need, nowhere near what it was, you know, 40, 50 years ago. And it's because of mismanagement. It's actually because of these environmental policies and mismanagement that's created the problem.
So this is a question I've always wanted to ask you. I kind of know the answer, but for those out there interested, are animals and plants just as important as humans?
No. I mean, animals and plants are important, but they're not. I mean, they're important, and you know, God created them, and you know, as God's creation, there is a critical importance to them. But I think that, you know, obviously, you know, I can answer this in a couple of ways. But one is, I mean, you know, in Genesis chapter 1, he created man last, and he created man as the pinnacle of his creation. And so, you know, he created man in his own image. No plant or animal is that way. As a matter of fact, in Genesis chapter 2, you know, Adam named all the animals, and naming them shows that he has dominion over them. I mean, so God gave him dominion in Genesis 1, but we see that play out in Genesis, you know, chapter 2. So we see in that God made man to be the pinnacle of his creation. He made man in his own image. And so, you know, but he made the animal kingdom, and he made, you know, plants, he made to be an aid to man. So, I mean, he gave them to us. He gave them, he said every, you know, he gave the fruit of the trees to eat. And, you know, that's in Genesis 1 and 2. Genesis 9, he gave the animals, you know, to eat. And so we see that, I mean, he did that, and you know, it's man, creation is to serve man, you know, in that way. And man is to care for the creation and see the creation, you know, be abundant and flourish.
To be good stewards of plants and animals.
Yes.
Okay, so is weather cyclical?
Yes.
Like you just mentioned, some say there was a reason why when Noah came off the ark, God then said, okay, the animals are also now for eating, because the climate had been a little different before the flood. There were more plants and things to eat. Now it's going to be a little more tough.
So. Yeah, I think, okay, so there's a couple of thoughts here. One is, yes, definitely before the flood, we can be pretty clear or pretty sure that the climate was different, and it was probably uniform. Because we know after the flood, you know, in Genesis 9, he also said that there'd be seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the understanding is prior to the flood, there didn't have, you know, summer, winter, spring,
fall. The earth was not on an axis before the flood. After the flood, it became
tilted. Yeah, well, that's definitely
I've heard
possible.
It said that the flood was that chaotic.
Well, the flood, we don't give enough, we probably, I shouldn't say some of us do, but most people don't understand how cataclysmic and how much it changed at the flood. Like, it changed everything. And I think it changed the climate. And I think that, and ultimately, I would argue that that's probably why we went from vegetarian, eating fruits and basically plants prior to the flood, to eating meat after the flood. There was something different about our atmosphere that created the need for meat. And you know, it's interesting because I've actually changed my diet quite a bit, as you know, and as a lot of people who listen to us would know. And, you know, I eat more meat now than ever because of health reasons. But one of the benefits of eating meat is you have more energy. And it's interesting because, you know, and if somebody chooses to be vegetarian, you know, like, I guess that's their choice, I guess. But I think that's why God gave us the meat to eat. I think it's because he knew that we needed it, you know, for nutrition in the world that we live in. And I think that when we don't eat meat, it weakens us. And so, yeah, there's something different about, I mean, that was your answer. I mean, your question was, there something different? Yes, that the flood changed everything, and it changed our climate. It changed everything. And I think that points to that there are things at play when it comes to our climate that are out of our control. Right, we can't control them, and we're not impacting the world, at least at the level that they're saying, you know, that they try to say that we're impacting the world.
Yeah, and I agree. Weather is cyclical. There have been hot summers, there have been cooler summers, and as we record this, we're heading into summer.
Yes,
it's supposed to be maybe the hottest summer on record.
Yes.
But again, these records go back about 150 years.
Yes,
so it's hard to know.
Well, and I, you know, the flood itself was a massive climate, massively impacted the climate, even for many, many centuries after the flood. We, you know, as a biblical Christian, you know, I reject, you know, I think how many ice ages do they say that we were supposed to have? Several.
Yeah.
But, you know, I believe that after the flood, that the flood was a volcanic event and not just a water event. It was a water event, but it was also volcanic, and that I think that there was one large continent, and funny enough, you know, you have secular science agrees that there was one large continent. I believe that as part of the floods, when the floodgates were opened, that it burst forth from underneath, and it was a cataclysmic volcanic event that split the continents. And so that there was tons of ash and tons of steam that was put into the environment because of this hot event. And for many, many centuries, even after the flood, I don't know how long, but for a long time after the flood, you would have had cloud cover. Like, it would have been a vapor layer that would have spread out throughout the globe. And it would have changed the temperature of the earth, and I think the ice would have encroached. Oceans would have, the level of the oceans would have dropped because of the ice, you know, with that ice accumulation on the land. And I think that's what allowed for migration. And you see Noah, you know, starting out, and you see, you know, the tower, they ended up gathering at the Tower of Babel, and God confused the languages, and then they spread throughout the earth. And I think that it was that ice age after the flood that allowed, with the lower sea levels, that allowed for the migration, you know, that, you know, like the Bering Strait was exposed, and they're able to walk across from what is now Russia to Alaska and down into South America. Yeah, I think that that's how the migration happened, was because of the ice age after the flood. So my whole point is that yes, there have been massive changes in climate throughout man's history, you know, and the flood would be, you know, part of that change.
Yeah, and sent me an interview that Tucker Carlson did with a professor who was talking about, he, and I tend to agree with him, is that we kind of underestimate the power of the sun. There have been times where the sun has been very strong, and there have been times when it's been weaker as it rotates or whatever it is. But and that has caused cooler summers and, you know, and cooler winters.
Sure.
I remember growing up in Minnesota, we had some cool summers where that just wasn't, we barely got a couple 90 degree days.
Yeah.
And then there are other summers where we're in the 90s all the time.
Sure.
So you just don't know. And I think the key is man the cause of that?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, we're kind of turning the corner now a little bit in our, you know, talk here. And yeah, I think that's the question that we have to answer as biblical Christians, you know, is that, you know, the people in the out, you know, secular science is saying that we're undergoing climate change. And I think as biblical Christians, we have to recognize that climate does change. The climate has changed historically, that we've already pointed to the flood. We've pointed to, you know, an ice age after the flood created by the, you know, water vapor. And so, you know, climate has never been a constant. It's never been, you know, an expectation. I say never. Since the flood, climate hasn't been a constant. Prior to the flood, it's probable that the climate was very constant, that temperature was very much the same year round, that the weather was pretty much, you know, basically the same every day. And, you know, that the weather patterns that we see today are as a result of what happened in the flood, and as a result of, you know, whether it's the earth being knocked, you know, tilted, you know, where it wasn't tilted before. I don't know that that's the case. I'm certainly not saying that it isn't, but I am saying that the flood was cataclysmic and changed everything. And that from that point forward, I am saying there were seasons and, you know, whatever the physical mechanism was that created that, I don't know, can't say for sure, but I can say that that's what's happened now. And since that point forward, the world has been in a state of flux.
Yeah.
And now what's interesting about Genesis 9, by the way, is that God promises that there would be seasons. And so it's interesting that there's a sense of that he's promised, in spite of the flux that we are in terms of climate, that he's going to keep things, that he promises to keep things, you know, stable, that there's going to be a stability too. And there is a stability. We can expect that it's going to, you know, in a few months, we're going to start turning cooler and it's going to get cold, and then we it may not be as cold as last year. It may be colder. I don't know, but we can expect that it's going to get cold. And then in spring, it's going to warm back up. And I mean, there's an expectation, and he's promised that that's going to happen. And he's also promised he's not going to flood the world and, you know, and judge it by water. I mean, so we have the Noahic, the promise from the Noahic covenant that, you know, the seasons are going to continue, and he's going to keep things the way they are, even though there may be flux in the weather and how it, you know, the winter may be colder, it may be hotter, it may be
dense. Yes, and there's low pressures and there's high pressures.
Yes.
Low pressures seem to cause more bad weather. High pressure, what is it? The high pressure, the air sinks, and low pressure, it rises. I hope I have that right. So in Florida here, we have low pressures that come in and they become hurricanes, they become storms, and they wrap up, and that's all because of the, you know, the flood and the curse that we have these things. And we, in the Midwest, we have tornadoes. We have high pressure, low pressure.
Yes.
Weather systems coming together, crashing together. And
yes,
they didn't have that before the flood.
Not before the flood. I don't think so.
But are these, and this is what they say, and this is what I was going to ask you, are we, are we looking at like Psalm 2 kind of being lived out by these governments, where that Psalm 2 is, why do the nations rage and the peoples meditate on a vain thing? The kings of the earth take their stand and the rulers take counsel together against Yahweh and against the anointed, saying, let us tear their fetters apart, cast away. So is this the governments of the world taking what they're seeing, is they're trying to say, hey, look, we have a climate crisis because there's too many people on the earth. We need to do something about this. We need to change things. So we're gonna do away with the combustible engine. We're gonna do away with oil and all these things. Take away gas stoves. No more fires in your fireplace because it pollutes the air and it causes the climate to. So is it all just a big power grab to take over the world, control everyone?
Well, I mean, the short answer is yes. I do believe that. I do. I don't. I do reject completely that climate change has been, by and large, caused by man's activity. I mean, I think that man's activity can have impact, right? Especially, you know, I used to go to California when I was young, and you know, the smog would get stuck in that valley there, you know, and it would just be as thick as pea soup. And you know, I think that, you know, that cars and trucks and the way they were made, I think obviously contributed to that. And you know, I think that it was right and good to find better ways to, you know, to burn cleaner, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's a good thing. So I don't think as Christians we ought to be, you know, so much a, you know, climate deniers, if you will, that we are okay with, you know, factories pushing, you know, poisons into the atmosphere and you know, poisoning our streams and that sort of thing. That would not be, you know, that would be going against the Genesis mandate. The Genesis mandate is we to care for our resources and to, you know, cause them to be abundant. And you know, do things that are going to help them be abundant. And I don't think that we should be on the side of corporations that are pumping poison in our air. At the same time, to begin to let that, to have that pendulum swing the other direction and begin to say that, you know, all human activity is problematic, you know, like even eating meat, you know, like growing cattle and eating meat is problematic. That's that. Now you're getting into the realm of I'm controlling a population, right? If God gave us meat to eat, He had a reason to give us meat to eat. And so for them to say, oh no, we need to limit the number of cows on the earth because they put out, you know, methane gas that creates a problem with the atmosphere. That's taking things too far, and that's now I'm using climate to control my population. I'm using climate to make my population weak. And you know, because like I said earlier, I think meat is, you know, what helps us grow and be strong, and the population that's growing and being strong is a population that's harder to control. And so I think that some of the policies are specifically meant, you know, as an example, trying to, you know, now get us to eat bugs for, you know, using bugs and insects for food, you know, for protein. And, you know, that's just it's not a good source of protein, and it's not going to be, it would have more to do, if you do that, I think it has more to do with power and trying to control us as opposed to trying to save us.
Yeah, and it seems like the cause of the climate crisis has been changing. Like the 10, 15, 20 years ago, it was this.
It was, yeah, I mean, I think the big, you know, us growing up, it was cars and trucks and
pollution.
Yeah, factories and those are the things pumping, you know, these things into the air. And, you know, coal was a big one. I disagree with them that coal is a problem, but I think coal is actually fairly clean. But that's an aside. I think that's an agenda as well. But yeah, I mean, I think that it has switched, you know, over the past probably 15 years to more looking at things like cattle. And when I, it's funny, when I first heard it, you know, cattle being a problem, you know, that cow flatulence is a problem, you know, that I actually laughed about it. Thought, like, are you kidding me? Is this, I mean, no, but that's not true. I mean, and it probably took a while for me to really clue in that they actually thought the cows were a problem. I mean, that's,
well,
a,
but that fits your theory on the crickets.
Yes.
That if they want to, so maybe that's a convenient, the cows are the problem, so let's get rid of all of them so people have eat crickets.
Yes.
And they'll get weaker, but
yes,
that all fits. But now, isn't it, it's CO2, right? That's the main culprit. I don't even know what CO2 is.
I think it's always been CO2 in the sense of the ozone layer. And I'm not a scientist. We've said that many times as we have tried to address some scientific issues.
Yeah, I'm not a scientist.
So I'm sure somebody on, you know, some, one of our listeners or more than one of our listeners would be able to tell me exactly what the issue is. But that, I mean, it is carbon dioxide, you know, is being seen as the culprit of the problem. Tucker Carlson has interviewed, his name is Dr. Willie Soon, S-O-O-N, Dr. Willie Soon. And he talks about carbon dioxide, you know, not being the problem. And he actually says it's the sun that creates most of the climate change and changes with the sun. It's interesting. We talked about the flood and we talked about the water vapor going into the atmosphere. Right now, one of the biggest climate change drivers, you talked about the summers being warmer. Right now, there's a, in 2022, I think it was, volcano erupted in the South Pacific. Hunga Tonga volcano is a volcano that was under the South Pacific Ocean, and it exploded in, or it erupted in January 15, 2022, and it produced the largest underwater explosion ever recorded by modern instruments. It released a large amount of water and volcanic gases into the stratosphere and was the worst volcanic eruption in terms of death, property damage, and financial losses in 2022. But after it erupted, it actually, the vapor and the ash spread throughout the globe over the ensuing months and had created a huge impact in the climate in terms of, you know, I say huge, you know, it's huge in the sense of that it's been recorded. The differences have been recorded, and so it was large enough to actually change, you know, the temperature of the oceans and the temperature of the atmosphere. You know,
did it make it warmer?
Yes.
Wow.
The oceans are warmer, and
that's why there's more hurricanes.
And yes, there's a lot of people who believe that the hurricane, the recent rash of large thunderstorms, tornadoes, and now are in hurricanes as well, is directly correlated to what happened with that volcanic eruption.
And that's man's fault.
No. No, it's no, and the sun's also changing, and you know it's going through changes, and you know that there's different things that are happening with that, and you know there's also, you know, the change in the magnetic field, and you know that we saw even recently the Northern Lights being able to be seen even as far south as Florida.
Sunspots are,
yes,
shoot out that plasma stuff, and
yes,
there's been bigger ones.
Yes, there was one that just happened that, you know, Elon Musk talked about, you know, that the Starlink satellites were undergoing some, you know, major radiation because of what was happening. So, you know, I think that, you know, the point is that scientists are trying to point to human activity as being the reason for all these climate changes. And in reality, when you look at it historically, but also when you look at it even today, what we find is that natural phenomena that has nothing to do with man is creating change, you know, more change than man could ever create. And that's not to say, again, I mean, you look at, that's the reason I was talking about Los Angeles or Southern California and the smog. And that's not to say that we can't have any impact. I mean, that would be wrong to say that. What we're saying is that overall climate change has more to do with, you know, just natural phenomena than it does what man's activity will ever do.
Right. And as believers, it's hard for me to worry about it because I know God is sovereign. So even if the temperature does go up, I still believe God is on his throne and that he's in charge and that I don't have to worry because
yes,
there's a reason for everything.
That's right.
And man, yeah, say man's responsible for 0.05%
yes,
of the temperature going up. That doesn't scare me. I'm not worried about it because in the long run, I know God's in control. But I suppose if you're not a Christian, you're going to panic because, oh my word, all the ice caps are going to melt and we're going to flood. And remember when that Al Gore talked about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's still one of the
polar bears that are all going to.
Yeah, that's still one of the big, you know, supposed issues is that they're going to melt. And
but why do we know that?
Because always been in flux anyway. I mean, that's the reason I brought up the whole flood and the ice age after the flood, and you know the ice was encroaching on the, you know, in terms of the continents, and we see you know the ocean's levels dropping, and you know as the earth cooled from that, you know, from the flood, from that volcanic action, you see that steam from the going into the atmosphere, you see the ice age, you see then, you know, over time that begins to recede, and now we're living in a relatively warm time, you know, relative to what it was after the flood. And you know, I mean, that's just natural phenomena. I mean, it's just you know, we see sunspots, we see you know, volcanoes that are, you know, erupting in the South Pacific. I mean, that are creating climate change. And we're not denying that there's climate change. I mean, we're actually saying, no, we agree that there is climate change. What we're denying is that it's human activity that's creating climate change on the scale that would actually matter, that would actually bring about problems for society.
Yeah. And like how much if like five volcanoes erupt, how much does that spew up? Is that as much as like 12 cars? I mean, I don't know. Like,
oh, it'd be millions of cars.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yes.
So, and that happens. I mean, I think I used to follow that.
Yeah.
Like at one time, I think there were 12 active volcanoes.
Yes.
Going off. And, yes. And I haven't seen it lately. There's not, yeah. There hasn't been as many, but.
Well, but, you know, we've had major eruptions. Like, you know, obviously when I was growing up, when you were young, Mount St. Helens and, you know, up in Washington exploded, sent ash hundreds of miles into the, you know, around, you know, radius around where it was at. I mean, the ash floated and sent just tons and tons of things in the atmosphere. We talked about the one in the South Pacific that's recent, but there's been others, many over the years. I mean, So yeah, there's so many things that contribute to the flux in climate change, or the flux in the climate, that, you know, we just reject that it's man's activity that's creating the problem or creating a problem.
Right, and I was going to say that summer of 1980 when I was a kid growing up in Minnesota, that was a cool summer because of Mount St. Helens.
Oh yeah,
it was actually a haze over the sun.
Wow, yeah, I don't remember us having a direct impact where I was at in that way.
You were in Arkansas.
I was in Arkansas. South. Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, maybe the prevailing winds brought it over Minnesota, but I do know that ash was falling like hundreds of miles away. And so it was a significant event, especially in North America. And so I think the question that we have to answer is why do we think that what is the agenda? You know, what is the agenda?
There's something behind this.
Yes.
Right?
There's something behind it. I think, it's interesting because we've had a couple of episodes where we interacted with Joe Rogan and Tucker Carlson, and it's funny because Tucker actually hits on this in that interview, and I thought we would play this clip. It's only just less than a minute, so I thought we'd play this clip and interact with what he says.
Okay, so like, let's say you believed every quote piece of science or scientific claim about global climate change, you would not reach the same policy conclusions. You'd be like, well, the first thing we need to do is ban private air travel, because obviously that doesn't make any sense. And then the second thing we need to do is, you know, whatever. You'd look at it rationally from a scientific, if you bought the premise, which I don't, but if you did, you would. That, no, you go through every climate, quote, climate demand. Not one of them disempowers large organizations, whether it's NGOs or the government of the United States. Not one of them. They all make the government more powerful, and they all make you less powerful. So that's when you know it's not really about the temperature of the Earth's atmosphere. It's about making them more powerful and disempowering you. And
so what Tucker is saying, I mean, it's pretty clear what he's saying, is that if there really were an issue with the climate, and by the way, I know that there are people who believe that, right? They believe that there is an issue and man's activity is creating a problem in the climate. I believe that there are people who legitimately believe that and think that we need to do something to fix it. But what he's saying is at the highest levels that we know it's not the case, that they don't believe that because of their response to it. And the response is not everybody needs to do their part. You know, that he mentioned private air travel. And what he's talking about is, you know, when, you know, these elites go to Davos and they all travel in their private jets to Davos, if they really believed that climate change was a problem, if they really believed that it was going to be catastrophic for that what they're doing, that sort of activity is catastrophic for the Earth, they would change it. They would say you can't do this, right? But they're not doing that. And you know, there's a reason why Al Gore has the mansion that he has while he's preaching and he's traveling around the world while he's preaching climate change. And oh, by the way, it is a religion and he is preaching it. And so there's a reason why it doesn't apply to him. It's because it's more an agenda to take power away from the common man and to give it to the elites. And, you know, and that, I think that is what is at play here. And ultimately there, I think that we very well could, I mean, I could be a prophet with this. Not really. I'm not a prophet. I'm not the prophet nor the son of a prophet, but I do think that possibly, and I think you might have mentioned it in the opening, I do think that quite possibly they could use climate as being the next major catastrophe. And so, you know, maybe, I don't know if it's going to be some sort of major weather system that comes or, you know, a series of events that happens that they, you know, point to climate being the issue and, you know, shut down air travel, shut down, you know, the different things that we do. I don't know, but I do know that it is it's an agenda for power at this point. And there's no doubt that it's an agenda for power. Instead of this idea, I mean, a man, obviously we talked about economics is based on scarcity, you know, like how to, I mean, I think it's Thomas Sowell who talks about, you know, economics ends up being how to properly distribute what is scarce. Right, there's a principle of scarcity, but I don't think we should look at the world that way. That ultimately the world is abundant, and it's not scarcity in terms of resources. It's actually abundance because God is the one who's providing the resources. He's providing that energy, and it's because of our misuse of it that there's a scarcity. It's not because it isn't there, and I think that's what ultimately the Lord Jesus is going to prove and show in the millennial kingdom, is that when the resources are used properly, that there's an abundance of those resources. You know, it's interesting because I think we tend to think in terms of scarcity because that's what we've known, right? I mean, we don't think in terms of abundance because we haven't experienced that. You know, when I grew up, you know, I didn't miss many meals. I will say that. Maybe a few, but we always were concerned, right? I mean, mostly, I say always, there was a concern as to whether or not we were going to have enough. And we lived that way. But I think that because of that, we have this tendency to think in terms of scarcity. And I think there is a scarcity, and I think it's because of man's mismanagement. But I think what really is happening is that there is an abundance that God has created the world in abundance. And we see that. I mean, in Genesis chapter one, this is at the end of creation, in chapter 1, verse 29, it says, "Then God said, 'Behold, I've given to you every plant yielding seed that is on the surface of all the earth, and every tree which has the fruit of the tree yielding seed, it shall be food for you. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the sky, and to everything that creeps on the earth, which has life, I've given every green plant for food. And it was so. And God saw all that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And so, you know, we see that, you know, that whole idea of it was very good. There was a, you know, that he'd given food. There's an abundance to that. There's not scarcity, right? There's not scarcity. So you ask yourself, and I've said this several times, but you ask yourself, why is there scarcity? Well, there's scarcity because it's mismanaged. There's scarcity mm-hmm. because man, you know, political issues, because man is selfish, and because man wants it all to himself, as opposed to sharing, as opposed to managing in a way that causes things to flourish. That's how God created it to be. God created it to be, to flourish, to have abundance. And it's because of man that it's not. And it's not because we need to limit, you know, our use of it. It's because we need to manage it better. So
good, to be good stewards, that's yes. part of it.
Yeah, good, I mean, stewards of the earth, yes.
So we're not all going to die because of the climate crisis.
No.
The Lord's in control. Okay, I was going to ask you this question.
Well, I mean, I think tribulation, there's going to be a lot of climate problems.
Well, they say that's the depopulation as well.
Yeah.
The Lord's going to take care of that.
Yeah, I think that depopulation is going to be at the Lord's hands. I mean, not to be flippant about that.
Right.
I mean, that is a judgment, and we need to be, I mean, that is a sobering subject. But we're, you know, climate change is going to be the least of our problems.
Yeah, and you look at 2 Peter, talks about the earth being burned up. And the new heavens and new earth. So
yes,
and again, not to say that we can't take care of it because it's going to be burned up. But yeah, we are.
Well, we do have a mandate to care right. for the earth.
Yeah.
Right. There's no doubt about it. That God, I mean, I don't want anybody in our church or anybody listening that would say,
yeah.
we're not saying that, you know, go use and abuse. We're not saying that, right? We do need to really work hard at, you know, caring for the earth around us. You should care for the environment around you as to the level that you can. I mean, if you own land, you should care for your land. If you own animals, you should care for your animals. I mean, mm-hmm. you should want to see them flourish, and to abuse them would be wrong.
Yep, seasonal and cyclical.
Yes,
weather changes.
Yes, weather changes, climate changes, but it's just as apt to change back as it was to change in the first place.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Yeah. And I've always agreed. I don't understand how people do this. I eat a lot of Twinkies in my life. I've never thrown Twinkie wrappers just out in the wind. I don't understand why people would throw things like just let, you know, I've always looked for a trash can. So that's
Keith's.
That's me.
That's Keith's environmental
yeah.
impact. He's never thrown out a wrapper.
I give a hoot. I don't pollute.
That's an old one.
Yeah, remember that one?
Yeah, I do.
I was going to ask you this question.
Remember the old wrinkled Indian guy that
That was Iron Eyes Cody did that commercial about pollution, garbage, and
crying.
Yeah. That affected me as a kid.
Oh, it did.
I think that's why. But I never understood why people would just drive. I've seen people do this, driving down the street, throwing their McDonald's wrappers out the window.
Yeah.
Why do that?
Yeah, that was a big problem in Arkansas years ago.
Was it?
Because yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
People littered all the time.
Just keep it in your car and throw it away when you get home.
Or just keep it in your car.
Well, yeah, that's my problem.
That's my problem,
My
too.
Wife still gets on me every time. She knows, hey, well, you went to McDonald's this week. How'd you know? Well, I look in the back seat. You've been listening to Fresh Bread, podcast ministry of Grace Bible Church Gainesville. For more information, go to gracegainesville.org. And thanks for listening.